This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Welcome, everyone, to Best of the Rest, an indie comics podcast. This is Jay Loving, and as always, with me, my podcast partner, Dennis Chandler. Hello, Dennis.
Howdy, folks. I hope you're at somewhere warmer than we are.
Yes. Well, tonight, we are pleased to have a guest with us, a returning guest, Ben Kahn. Welcome, Ben.
Hi there, everyone. Hey, good to be back.
Glad to have you.
I think that's what the people on the Johnny Carson and the Letterman said when they would come back. So good to be back.
Well, like I said, we're glad to have you back. A couple things. There have been some developments, I know, in your work since we've last talked. The thing I wanted to start with before anything else, though, you're in New York. Did you
Yes.
go down and freeze your ass off in Times Square on New Year's Eve with the rest of the
world? God, no.
Why?
Of course not.
It was only 9 degrees or whatever.
I'm a New Yorker. You think I ever go to Times Square?
Well, I had to
ask. For any reason. No.
The locals never do the local stuff.
Well, that's true. I should have known that.
No, there's local stuff. Then there's go to Times Square. Local stuff is like, oh, you know what? I never really make time to, like, go see the Statue of Liberty. This is, fuck no, if you ask me to meet me in Times Square, I will just stand you up, because that shit ain't happening.
Okay.
What if it was a new restaurant that was getting rave reviews?
There's new restaurants getting rave reviews everywhere. We don't have to go to Times fucking Square for that. Look, so I can get the new restaurant getting rave reviews that isn't overpriced and full of goddamn tourists and fucking taking their pictures with naked Spider-Man. Who, by the way, naked Spider-Man, always crazy anti-Semitic, so fuck that guy.
Oh, gosh.
Have you not heard about the rash of anti-Semitic Elmos from a few years back?
I have not. I know. I missed that.
Yeah, that was a whole thing.
Isn't that where Times Square, isn't that also where the naked cowboy hangs out? Or?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Yeah, that guy.
It's where all the touristy things are.
There used to be a naked cowgirl, too, but he sued her.
Okay. Well, gosh, I didn't mean to hit on a sore subject there. But
Because New York is nothing if not proud to live up to its stereotypes.
Well, as is true with a lot of people. So
that just means you got to go visit it sometime, Jay. New York Comic Con's fun out here.
Yes, I would love to.
It is. It's very different. It's different than San Diego. It has a different feel.
I haven't been to San Diego. I don't think I could handle San Diego. Just too much of a crowd now.
Well, I think it's also just a difference in the cities. Like, San Diego Comic-Con transforms the city. There's nowhere in the city you can go where you're not aware that it's Comic-Con going on. In New York, if you're east of, like, 9th Ave, you're not going to have any idea anything's going on. It doesn't even make a fucking... It's the second biggest convention, and it barely makes a blip on the city.
So you're
You'll
saying
see some billboards and, like, a Game of Thrones fucking bike thing riding around. You'll just be like, oh, I wonder what that's about. Burr, burr, burr. I got places to be.
So you're saying San Diego Comic-Con's like a college town on football weekends, the population doubles?
Oh, yeah. New York Comic Con, it's like, okay, yeah, no, people are wearing strange costumes. That's just going to happen. It seems like it's happening more this particular weekend, but I can't say it doesn't happen other weekends.
Well, they could be heading downtown for partying that night, hitting the club.
Exactly. Exactly. And there you go. It's really hard to make New Yorkers actually give a fuck. Look, it's cold and we got places to be.
No, wait, so you're a native New Yorker. So you've been there all your entire life.
So I grew up in Southern Connecticut, New York. I only moved to the city proper a few years ago, but New York news has been local news most of my life. New York metropolitan area native.
Yeah, I lived in New Haven, and it's just like, yeah, that was.
I went to high school in New Haven.
Yeah, at the time that was, you know, that's a suburb. You just hop on the train. Yeah. And head on down, or you get on the Merritt Parkway and drive down if you can bear the traffic.
Hopkins School, that's where I went to high school, in New Haven.
All right. Yeah, I was right outside New Haven near Yale when I was staying there. That kind of split the difference for me and my wife. She worked for GE, I worked for Pratt & Whitney. And I think I had the better end of that deal because the traffic wasn't as bad. I was heading away from New York.
What can I say about New Haven?
Great pizza.
I guess if you have nothing nice to say, don't say anything at all.
They got a good hospital system. That's what I have to say there. About.
That's good. That's good. There's lots of violent crime.
Yeah, well, bringing back the memories.
Oh man, it's like West Philadelphia without the rest of Philadelphia.
Well, you mentioned New York Comic Con. I wanted to thank you for signing my copy of Heavenly Blues number one at New York Comic Con.
Oh, yes. No, of course. I'm happy it got home in good condition and all that.
It did, very much, and I appreciate it.
So. Fantastic. No, New York Comic Con was definitely a lot of fun this year.
That's good. We're glad that. Well, on Heavenly Blues, you're four issues in. Number five,
yes.
Now, if previews is correct, which I...
Out next month. Out early February.
That's what they've got at least.
So I don't have an exact release date on that, but I believe it'll be either the 7th or the 14th.
Okay. So, how many issues total are we looking at?
Six.
Okay.
Yep. I'm looking at some of the inks for the final issue today, in fact.
And you're like,
So how does that work as the writer? So you've written the script, you're giving it to your artist, and mm-hmm. so it's been drawn, it's been inked. So review the pages to kind of make sure it's kind of what you were trying to describe in your script and everything? Or
yeah.
How's that dynamic work?
So the way that dynamic works is, yeah, pretty much to that part of the process, pretty much exactly what you described. I write the script, he draws it. Sends it back to me at various stages of review. And what I look at is instances when I get the art, what I look at are instances where if it doesn't exactly match what's in the script or doesn't quite work the way I imagined it, what I look at is either can I make small changes to the dialogue to just like make it work and make it flow? Or is this something that is missing key information that the story needs to work and thus need to be edited or partially redrawn. And so we kind of do that at various paces, you know, at the pencil stage, at the ink stage, at the color stage. When we get to the color stage, normally then you would hand it off to the letterer. In this instance, I'm the letterer, so I just do it on my end. My particular process is kind of doing a little bit at each step. So I usually, in order to keep the process running and efficiently and like to try to save as much time as I can, I usually letter off the inks and then make minor adjustments to that once the final color pages come in.
Okay, and you're doing it in sequence or do you get, you know, you'll get page 3 and then you'll be reviewing page 7 and then maybe page 6 and then to page 20 or do you get it sequentially, 1, 2, 3, 4?
We're doing it in sequence.
Okay.
We should mention the artist, Bruno Hidalgo, is working mm-hmm. with you. When you give him the script, I know that some writers will have suggestions of, okay, this is what I'm kind of visualizing in this panel. Do you do any of that, or do you leave it entirely up to him?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, very much so. No, my scripts are not, you know, paragraphs and paragraphs, but I definitely try to hit the basic details. Sometimes there'll be a suggestion of what kind of angle I'm looking at, even if it's just, like, close-up, medium shot, far shot. I'll definitely try to give indication of exactly what kind of emotions each character in the panel should be feeling. Any emotion I try to, you know, I'm always trying to think of what should characters be doing with their hands and bodies to try to add more kineticism to it. So they can definitely be more like suggestions more than like hard guidelines. I definitely want Bruno to always have like the freedom to really make the scene flow as he best envisions it. But I always try to give him, I never try to leave him wanting for something to draw in a panel. I always try to give enough details to really fill it up and give a good vision of it.
Sure.
Does that include like the background, kind of what you're seeing behind characters?
To a degree, you know, it certainly depends on what it is. You know, if there's particular detail that needs to be in the background, like say I'm doing some kind of background gag, or it's a fight scene where they're going to be interacting with the environment in a heavy way, there it's more important to really be thinking about the scene. But, you know, if it's just two characters in a park, like talking in a park, the background, unless I have something specific in mind, is just going to be still in a park doing park stuff.
Also, I'm always fascinated by the creative process and how it works. I know, in like you mentioned, a day job. So you work during the day and then you write otherwise. What is a little bit about your routine, especially how do you transition from, you know, doing your normal things during the day into the writing process? Because that seems like you have to get into a mindset.
I mean, it's probably compartmentalizing and thinking about stuff during commutes and walking around and just expanding the time you're brainstorming and taking notes. But yeah, pretty much walk through the day is that pretty much 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. is work, getting ready for work and being at work. Then I'd say probably 6 to 8 is exercise and dinner time. And then from around like 8 to, say, 11 to midnight is cartoons and working on comic time.
And this is, you do this 7 days or 6 days or however many days a week, every day?
Oh, no, that's 5 days. Weekends I get to do a lot more comic stuff, which is nice.
That's good.
Yes, no, those are the weekdays.
And I guess the comics are kind of like the hobby, the relaxation task at this point for you.
I mean, they're the thing. Like, everything else is just this stuff around working on comics. Working on comics is, like, the main thing, and then the relation. Everything else is just in relationship to the comics. Like, day job is just how I pay for food and artists while making comics.
Food is a good thing.
Yes.
Well, you mentioned in a couple of messages back on forth on Twitter that we talked about some work you got coming up in an anthology.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to discuss
that? I'd really like to discuss that stuff coming out. I have two anthologies that will be coming out this year. The first will be coming out this April, and it's being published by Dark Horse in an anthology called Once Upon a Time Machine, Volume 2. That is being created by Andrew Carl and Chris Stevens and Josh O'Neill, who run Locust Moon Press, which we worked together back in the day on my first graphic novel, Shaman. So it's been nice going back and working with that whole crew of people again, working with a really talented artist named Alexandria Huntington. And it's a real cool premise. So the premise of the first Once Upon a Time Machine, which came out from Dark Horse in 2013, I believe, was sci-fi reimaginings of fairy tales. So now Volume 2 is sci-fi reenactments of Greek mythology, which is great because I love Greek mythology. So Alexandria and I did a story called Athens Online, which retells the story of Athena and Poseidon's contest for Athens and reframes it as them as game developers in a giant open world RPG game.
Nice. That sounds very intriguing.
That was, yeah, no, and that was fun. Because also kind of harkened back to my old video game designer days. So that was fun to. So that was fun, kind of brought all full circle to my old job.
Great. So we look forward to that in April.
Yeah, Once Upon a Time Machine, two. Volume 2 from Dark Horse, April 2018.
So is that a trade paperback, or is it a hardcover, or?
Yeah, that's going to be a trade paperback.
Okay.
And it's got lots of great stuff. I think like Paul Pope's in it. I think J.G. Jones is in it. Farrell Darrample. So lots of awesomeness in it.
Great. We will certainly look forward to that. I like those types of anthologies.
Yeah, I don't think the previews has hit where that's coming out yet. That might be the previews at the end of this month where you can start ordering that.
I believe...
When's the solicit?
Now, according to Dark Horse's website here, it comes out April 11th.
It will probably be, I'm just guessing, in the February previews. Because it's usually 2 months ahead. So.
All right, so I have to make a note to myself to check that out.
Okay. Anything else?
I love Greek mythology.
I do too.
And then I'll be doing a story in the Corpus Anthology, which is going to be having its Kickstarter launch next month. And that is going to be a really cool, important, meaningful anthology, really just about living with illness and all different types of illness, physical, mental. So I'm doing a short story with a really talented artist named Lily Tang, and we're doing a short story about ADD, an extreme like ADHD, and just kind of what that's been like. Because, man, they fucking shot me up so full of so much ADD medication as a kid. It was a good call, but boy, I hit 11 and they just drugged me to the gills.
Interesting.
My grades went way up. I'm not knocking it. It was definitely the way to go.
Sure.
Good strategy.
That's called the Corpus Anthology?
Yeah, Corpus. Nadia Shamas is putting it together. She's editing it. And it's going to be, it's going to have a lot of really great people on it. Ryan Cady's on it. I believe Elliot Rahal, Jim Gibbons is on it. So a really exciting group of people, and I think there's going to be a lot of meaningful stories to tell in there. So the Kickstarter for that will be launching next month. So that'll be something to keep an eye out for.
Oh, so is there a theme amongst all the short stories in it?
Oh yes. It's all about, illness.
Okay. So like that's the overall theme. Okay.
Yeah. Like living with illness.
And both of these, offerings that you're going to put in these anthologies, did you approach them with a pitch or someone contact you? How did you get involved?
In this case, it's just, you know, the big wide world of random people bounce around and people you meet at conventions. And like I said, I'd worked with Locust Moon on a whole big graphic novel before, so had a relationship with them. In these cases, I was asked to pitch a story, and then in some cases, it took a little bit to get to the right story, so I was asked to contribute, but had to go through kind of a vetting process to get stories approved.
Sure. And if you said I missed it, is there a time frame of when the Corpus Anthology will be out?
So that is going to be out next month. Let me try to find you very quickly when that exactly is going to be going out. So I don't have an exact day. I just know it's going to be early February.
All right. Well, I will search for that because I want to make sure I get the information so we can.
Yeah, and that's the Corpus, C-O-R-P-U-S anthology.
Okay. Because I definitely want to make sure that we get that out on our tweets to let people know that it's coming.
Yeah, Teenie Howard has a story in there. Jim Gibbons, Taki Soma. So I think it's going to be have a lot of great art and writing around what I think is a meaningful, really meaningful theme.
Yeah, it sounds. I am intrigued with that a lot. Anything else? Any other projects you've got either started or in mind, or
what you can talk about?
We optioned the movie rights to Heavenly Blues, so that is a project that is moving right now. So that's really fun and really cool seeing stuff for that. Can't talk too much about that, but just it's really freaking crazy cool.
It must
be.
I got Hollywood people doing Hollywood things.
So would you write the screenplay for that, or would they have to hire an official Hollywood writer to convert it over?
I feel like I would just be so, like, adapting, not only adapting a story I wrote, but, like, adapting a story I just wrote. I can't even imagine how in my own head I would be about that. Like, every little thing, I'm like, oh, am I changing it for changing its sake? Am I sabotaging myself? Like, is this the new version? Like, I would be, oh, my poor Jewish neuroses couldn't take it.
But that is exciting. I can't imagine.
But it's issue 5 is going to be out next month, and after that we got issue 6, and then the trade will be coming out this year. And boy, am I really, really freaking excited for people to be able to read this whole story in one go. I think it's going to be a real cool heist story in the end.
Yeah, that was a question I had. Was there plans for a trade or a hardcover? So.
Oh, yeah, definitely plans for a trade for this. These are going to be a complete 6 issues.
Anything extra in the trade?
You know what? I'm not sure. As I'll talk about that, I could definitely include, would like to include some of the variant, like the variant cover we did for New York Comic Con, some of the character designs and early art. But I think that's all speculative at this point.
Okay.
Don't want to confirm anything. Sure. Don't hold me to any of that.
Okay. Don't spoil any surprises. You have to get the trade paperback to see what's in it.
Right.
So you're talking about character development. So, to kind of get into that. So for your characters for Heavenly Blues, did you write like a dossier on every character, a background from, when they were born up until they got to where they were going all beforehand, or do you develop character backgrounds as the story progresses?
Well, especially in terms of, like, background for this, where each character is from, like, a different era, there's kind of Lost-style flashbacks. Each character definitely had, a few solid paragraphs of, like, description of their backstory, personality, motivations, general where their arcs could go. But, yeah, it was a lot of, in this case, since every character had their own literally different region and era, it was a lot of research into getting, really figuring out all the specific tones of their worlds correct and making sure that the characters that came out of those time periods made sense.
Okay. So what kind of time frame is that? Because I sit here and I think, you're the comic book writer. You've got this vast background you can draw upon, and you just kind of sit there over a week's time and come up with all these character backgrounds. But it can't be that easy, is it? I mean, is it like months to kind of develop all the characters and the background and the research?
I mean, you're always thinking. Like, you're thinking about, like, on your way to work, in the shower, at the gym, on a run, like, you're always thinking about it, and it becomes like a downhill slope. It's like, once you get started figuring out a story and a character and a world, it's like, once you figure out one thing, then, like, that makes a whole bunch of other things fall into place, and then that brings so many, like, something else, and then, like, you can't stop. Like, the more you start thinking, like, the more it goes and goes and goes until you end up with a whole freaking world on your hands.
Yeah, I think I remember hearing a writer for TV talking about, like, he'd get so familiar with the characters, they'd be talking in his head, and he could not get their words on paper fast enough. And he didn't feel like he was writing. He was just copying what they were saying in his head.
The one problem is, if you're doing something like Heavenly Blues, I have a lot of characters that are way cooler than I am, and it's really hard, actually. Like, I have to actually stop and think about what people way cooler than me would say, and that's hard because I'm not cool enough to say the things they say.
Well, I think you're doing very well, because they thought that everything, all the characters seem very authentic in what they're saying, and the dialogue, it flows very well.
Ah, thank you. Very glad to hear that. I always have a lot of fun with dialogue. I can't work in cafes because I'm usually very bellicose and recite the dialogue out loud. So, like, no, that doesn't sound right. Let's try the emphasis on this word. Yeah, no, you go fuck yourself. No. You go fuck yourself. I'm not feeling this.
Yeah, how do you get yourself in the frame of, like, the mind of what an ancient Egyptian grave robber would say?
That's where it really helps, in this case, to kind of have slightly different dialects for characters, so they kind of sound different. So in the case of the Egyptian grave robber Amunet, it's something, you know, as small as she doesn't use very many contractions. So just once that's part of her dialogue, you just kind of know in your head that because that her dialogue has a certain different kind of rhythm to it. And, really, I try to make her just sound like she's freaking, like, looked ahead on her word-a-day vocabulary calendar. A very well-spoken character. But for me, it's like there's, like, music, like, audio. Even though it's a comics or silent, audio is still a really big component for me. At, like, 100%, like, music and having the right music when I'm writing a scene. But I also try to, even if it's just in my head, come up with, like, what their voices sound like, just so I can try to, like, hear what's right for their characters and personas.
So is that a frame of mind? So you've done your day job, and now you got to shift to that frame of mind. So is that easy for you to kind of make that shift and slip into it?
I mean, it's always there. Like, I always try to take it, like, one step at a time, just like, what's the next page? What's the next scene? What's the next line? And again, it's like, it's always going on. It's a constant process. It's, you know, again, it's at when you're in the shower, when you're on your way to work at the gym, and you're just thinking about, like, okay, this is the basic breakdown. This is the basic beat. And then once you kind of figure out what the basic skeleton is, you just jot that down, and then you kind of expand it out. You put, meat on the bones. You take that skeleton of a page and you figure out the panel breakdowns, the descriptions, the character emotions. But then while you're doing kind of the more mechanical work, while you're sitting down and have a few minutes during your lunch break, the back of your head you're working on, like, well, okay, what's the next scene? What's the basic breakdown for that next scene? So it's just always about taking that whatever is directly ahead of you and just keeping it in your head and letting it just churn there until it kind of comes out naturally as to what the scene is supposed to be.
And do you think something like, you know, you write a particular scene or finish one script, do you put it aside for a few days or some period of time and then come back to it?
Oh, definitely. For sure. You know, just basic spelling mistakes and little stuff. It's good to catch that. Good way to catch that stuff. And also, again, especially with dialogue where I'm just so always trying to, like, capture, like, a natural spoken voice, just going back and just being like, okay, let me really make sure this is the exact wording and emphasis I want to use on certain lines, or just tweak or polish up. So I definitely go back in during a couple of days and reread and do a little polish.
Based on things I've read by other authors and artists as well, you know, sometimes it's very difficult for them to let it go because I always think they can improve it. And do you get to the point where you just have to say, okay, it's good enough. I've got to let this go based on deadlines or whatever it is, or just for your sanity, you know, it's like, we've got to let this go at this point.
I feel like that'd be an easy thing, like comics or movies, but with comics, it's like the page is an unforgiving mistress, and sometimes it can be like the confines of the page can just be so tight, and you just have the panels that you have. That I feel like when I get finished to a place, I'm always just like, okay, this is the pacing, this is the way it is. If any, no, I wouldn't really say I have a problem letting it go a lot of times. Sometimes, if there's something that's wriggling in the back of my head that I deep down know isn't working right. But really, when I finish a script and I give it a few passes, if I'm happy with it, if the characters are sounding right, if the jokes are landing, if I'm happy with the way the characters are going and the story is paced, for the most part, I haven't had too much problems kind of letting the children leave the nest, so to speak.
Sure. Well, before we recorded, I solicited out to some people, friends of ours and others, for some questions, if they had anything we wanted to ask. And a couple of things came back that I thought were interesting. This is a question someone wanted to know. If you could write, the way it's worded, what mainstream book would you write and why, if you could? And I'm assuming by mainstream, they're talking about one of the titles from, say, a Marvel or DC.
Beast Boy. Don't even have to think about it. I want to do a Beast Boy series. I want to make him like kind of like, I want to age him out to be like kind of early 20s. I want him to be like a traveling like kind of stand up comedian. Like I want it to be super low key. I want it to be kind of like, oh boy, I used to compare it to Louis or Master of None, but that's no good. Damn you, terrible people doing terrible things. You've ruined my comparisons. But yeah, no, just like, I want to do like a crazy, like kind of, I love the introspect, like the intersection of fantastical people doing really mundane things. Like, I want to do a whole issue where he gets into a Twitter feud with Animal Man and then has to go on a super awkward team up.
Great. Wow.
Beast Boy and Animal Man. That is, you know what? I hadn't thought about that, but now that you've brought that up, I am very intrigued by that pair up.
I want to do anything that would let me be like super casual and just kind of do like a fun, self-aware, kind of low-key superhero comedy within the DC universe. And I really like the idea of just doing like a Seinfeld-esque, like, hey, what if the first two pages of every issue was just him against a brick wall talking about how Batman never bothered to learn his name. And he's pretty sure it's Batman. Batman memorized everyone's name. So if he's acting like he doesn't know my name, that's definitely just a weird-ass power move, and it's working.
you can see
how it would go.
You've given this some thought, haven't you?
A lot. Okay, well, Dan DiDio, if you're listening out there,
give me a call. Contact.
All I know is I'm going to be lying in bed tonight, just thinking about this Animal Man Beast Boy thing.
You can see it could work. It could work.
Oh no, it could definitely work. Look,
I'm just saying the Justice League probably has an annual Super Bowl party, and why not spend an entire issue just showing how that party is decorated?
Works for me.
Would it be in the satellite, or would it be somewhere on Earth?
It'd be on the satellite, but the key thing is they'd be watching the game, and they'd just see like Bruce Wayne like in the front row, and he'd just like look up at like this secret Justice League camera, just like, I see you, Cyborg. I got better seats than you.
What about artists? Is there like one or two artists that's like you're just dying to work with?
I mean, this would be totally kind of outside. Like, this would be like so Mondo super, because he's so good, like the super Mondo epic. But holy shit, would doing like anything with like Asad Ribic just be so out of this world? Like, it'd be something so different, but just, man, that when just every page just feels like myth coming to life. Just wow.
Sounds great.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
What are you reading? What are some of your favorite things you've been reading recently that you might recommend to us and others?
So I really like Mech Cadet U by Greg Pak. Really enjoying that. I think the first trade will be coming out soon, so I like that. I'm digging Fence. That's a neat book.
Really? We looked at that and
it's cute. I like it.
I thought about picking that up, but
it's cute. It's cute and light. I dig it. I definitely dig it. I got, you know, a bunch of like Image classes, like Southern Bastards, Saga, Wicked and Divine. I'll admit I'm reading a lot of DC stuff these days. I'm really enjoying Detective Comics, Superman, Green Arrow. What else? Motor Crush. Motor Crush is a real good series, and Number One with a Bullet. Definitely recommend all those books.
Well, anything you'd like to just bring up that we haven't talked about that you'd like to discuss while we've got you?
Oh, boy. You know, how was your day? I want to know how you're doing.
I do you really? I appreciate that. But my day was pretty mundane.
I do.
Pretty mundane.
That's okay. Mundane can be good. I like routine. Routine's got value.
I think Dennis has more interesting. He's got some HR problems.
Yeah, I had HR.
Yeah, you got HR problems.
I had HR
issues. Some resource.
At my day job, so it's just, you know, managing personalities. You know how that goes. Why can't we all just get along?
You resource the hell out of those humans. Resource the hell out of them.
I try to have a little bit of feeling. I like to have some sympathy and you know, can understand where people are coming from their perspectives. And there we go.
That doesn't sound right. I think that's a bad strategy.
Well, Dennis, unless you've got something else, I guess we can be respectful of Ben's time and let him get on with his evening.
Hit me with your best shot.
Well, what I'd like to know right now is now that we're in 2018, what is your 2018 con schedule?
Yes, actually, that's a great question. Thank you. My convention schedule is so I will be at AwesomeCon in DC on March 30th. And then a week later, on April 6th, you can catch me at C2E2 in Chicago.
Woo!
And then in August 19th, I'll be at Wizard World Philadelphia.
C2E2, Jay.
And that's it.
A bunch of us from this network are planning on being at C2E2. So yeah, look.
That would be great. You guys come by and say hi.
We would do that. Definitely.
You gonna have your crew there, your posse? Are you there gonna be soloing?
No, my fantastic partner will be there with me.
Okay.
Yep, and then I will be tabling with Marcus on Nasso and Jason Moore who do Voracious for Action Lab. So we'll be sharing a table, so get a bunch of Dinosaurs and Thieves. Which, speaking of, you remember Yoshi's Island, right?
Somewhat, yeah.
Man, that's a baby with a dinosaur. That's pretty much like Balto meets Jurassic Park. Where's my Yoshi's Island live action remake about a vicious raptor protecting a baby?
Well, maybe you can do that. Bring it to the small screen. Or the big screen.
That's all I'm saying. I need more raptor baby team-up stories. And that's the final thought. But aside from Raptor Baby team-up stories, which really is the only thing that matters, you can follow me on Twitter at BenTheCon. You can find, and then find places where you, my convention schedule and links to buy Heavenly Blues and my graphic novel Shaman. You can find at BenConComics.com.
Sorry, I had to mute my mic there for a moment. I haven't.
Oh, that's fine. He wanted to participate. So I guess the only thing we got to figure out is where the after parties are at C2E2.
They're wherever we make them, I guess.
That's the right attitude.
Well, Ben, we appreciate you coming on with us again.
Thank you for having me.
Personally, I love following all your tweets. They make me laugh daily.
I aim to please.
So, just to remind everyone, you know, we've got Heavenly Blues number 5 will be out early in February. The Corpus Anthology coming out sometime next month.
Kickstarter in February, and Once Upon a Time Machine Volume 2, April 11th.
Very good. This has been another episode of Best of the Rest. You can reach me, if you'd like to, at JForgets. Dennis, give them your contact information.
I'm at Oot Inger. So, yeah, I'm at Oot Inger whenever I am on Twitter.
Which is not often.
And
but
if you,
anyway.
Well, I'm on there. I'm still figuring out the Twitter machine. That's kind of like I'm aging myself on that. But I'm trying to check it at least once a day. I'm getting there.
Very good. You can also tweet the show at BOTRComics. If you happen to be on iTunes, you can leave us a review. We would appreciate that. So with that, thanks again to Ben Kahn for joining us, and we will see you again, and we will
Glad
see everyone next time. Thanks.
Night.